Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 12, canto 12, chapter 13, texts 11 and 12. Adi, what for? Adi, texts 11 and 12. Chapter 13.
Yeah. It's chapter
12. It's canto 12, chapter 13. Oh, that's 12. Chapter 13, texts 11 and 12. Oh, so before he gets into that, we should say that we're very fortunate today because of this storm moving away from us. If we had seen the full force of it, then maybe we would not have been here today. Like when Srila Prabhupada said, had the ocean showed its full strength, he didn't think that he would have survived another heart attack or another day. See? So we should be thankful by the grace of the Lord that we did not get the force of that hurricane. Okay, so I'll just go to the verse. Adi Madhya Vasaneshu Vairagya Jnanasam Yutam Harilila Kata Vrata Mitanandita Satsuram Sarva Vedanta Saramyat Brahmatmai Katva Lakshanam Vastva Vityatyam Tanishtam Kaivalya Hika Prayojanam Adi Madhya Vasaneshu Vairagya Jnana Samyutam Harilila Katavrata Mritanandita Satsuram Sarva Vedanta Saramyat Brahmatmai Katva Lakshanam Vatsva Vittiyam Tanishtam Kaivalya Hika Prayojanam Adimadhyā Vanashenu Vairagya Jnana Samyutam Harilila Katavrata Mritanandita Satsuram Sarva Vedanta Saramyad Brahmatmai Katva Lakshanam Vats va vittiyam tanishtam. Kaivalyaika prayojanam. Adimadya vasaneshu. Vairagya kyana samyutam. Hari lila katavrata. Mritanandita satsuram. Ramatmai katvalakshana. Vatsvadvityam tannishtam. Kaivalyaika prayojanam.
Okay. Adi. In the beginning. Madhya. The middle. Avasaneshu, and the end. Vairagya, concerning renunciation of material things. Akyana, with narrations. Samyutam, full. Hari Lila, of the pastimes of Lord Hari. Katavrata, of the many discussions. Amrita, by the nectar. Anandita, in which are made ecstatic. Satsuram, the saintly devotees and demigods. Sarva Vedanta, of all the Vedanta. Sairam, Saram, the essence, Yat, which, Brahma, the absolute truth, Atma Ekatva, in terms of non-difference from the spirit soul, Lakshanam, characterize, Vastu, the reality, Ad. Vaityam, one without a second. Tatnishtam, having that as its prime subject matter. Kaivalya, exclusive devotional service. Eka, the only. Prayojanam, ultimate goal. Translation and purport by the disciples of the Divine Grace. From the beginning to the end, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of narrations that encourage renunciation of material life, as well as nectarian accounts of Lord Hari's transcendental pastimes, which give ecstasy to the saintly devotees and demigods. This Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta philosophy, because its subject matter is the absolute truth, which, while non-different from the spirit soul, is the ultimate reality, one without a second. The goal of this literature is exclusive devotional service unto that supreme truth. From the beginning to the end, repeat, please. From the beginning to the end, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of narrations that encourage renunciation of material life, as well as nectarian accounts of Lord Hari's transcendental pastimes, which give ecstasy to the saintly devotees and demigods. This Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta philosophy, because its subject matter is the absolute truth, which while not different from the spirit soul,
is the ultimate reality,
one without a second.
The goal of this literature
is exclusive devotional service
unto that supreme truth.
Purport. Vairagya, renunciation, means giving up everything that has no relation with the absolute truth.
Saintly devotees and demigods are enthused by the nectar of the Lord's spiritual pastimes, which are the essence of all Vedic knowledge. Vedic knowledge elaborately negates the ultimate reality of material things by emphasizing their temporary, fleeting existence. The ultimate goal is vastu, the factual substance, which is advaitiyam, one without a second. That unique absolute truth is a transcendental person, far beyond the mundane categories and characteristics of personality found in our pale material world. This ultimate goal of Srimad Bhagavatam is to train the sincere reader in love of Godhead. Lord Krishna is supremely lovable because of his eternal transcendental qualities. The beauty of this world is a dim reflection of the ultimate, unlimited beauty of the Lord. Without compromise, Srimad Bhagavatam persistently declares the glories of the Absolute Truth and is therefore the supreme spiritual literature, awarding a full taste of the nectar of love of Krishna and full Krishna consciousness. Om Gyana Tirmanasya Gyanandana Shalakas Pakshulam Tanamina Tasmashu Vivena Mahu Vishnu Paraya Krishna 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 Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Krishna Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtatavishna Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhupada Shri Devarada Shri Vasili Gopakam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So we are on this last chapter, on this last chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, almost to the end. And the first part is speaking about renunciation. The Bhagavatam has dealt with or encouraged renunciation, stated here, at the beginning, the middle, and the end. So renunciation can actually be taken in different light. In the Varnashram system, one goes through the life's journey, and then at the end, he renounces. He renounces his household life, goes to the forest. We can deal with that a little. But within our philosophy, Lord Chaitanya explains, if one does not own anything, what is there to be renounced? Because really we come with an empty hand and we go with an empty hand. See? And then there's another thing, that rather than renounce everything, you utilize everything in the service of the Lord. Yukta Vairagya. See? Like this microphone, I mean, it's material, you know, it can be considered materialistic, but it's used to preach Krishna consciousness. And everything, the car, a nice luxurious car, is used to travel and preach. Palatial buildings are used to preach, to attract people. So this is our philosophy. But within the Vedic times, that was a different time. And then renunciation was different. That one goes to brahmacharya, householder, vanaprastha, and then sannyasa. See, and we'll look at the Srimad Bhagavatam, how this been approached. At the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it stated, we find that
Dhritarashtra is encouraged to take renunciation. And this is funny because he was so attached to material life at the beginning that his compassionate brother Vidura is trying to encourage him. So let us hear what Vidura is telling him here. You have been blind from birth, and recently you have become hard of hearing. Your memory has become feeble. Your teeth are loose. Your liver is defective, and you are constantly coughing up mucus. You are maintaining yourself just like a household dog by eating the remnants of food given by Bhima. There is no need to live off of those you try to poison and kill. So this is the harsh reality of Dhritarashtra's life. But yet, despite his attachment, because of the strong preaching of Vidura, he was able to detach himself from his miserable situation. And so he went into the forest, and his chaste wife Gandhari also followed him. He went to the northern Himalayas and he practiced what they call Ashtanga Yoga. Actually, Vidura was very regretful in the sense that he could not take to Krishna consciousness. But however, he took to Ashtanga Yoga, and then within, I think, 5 days, he went into yogic meditation and set his body alight in fire. And he burnt his body. And Gandhari, being the chaste woman, went and sit on that fire, and she emulated herself also. So that was his final renunciation, and that was hers. See? This may seem very difficult for us because that was a different age and a different time. That was the process. See? And so for us it is difficult to hear, especially when you hear about a satyrai to go and sit on that fire. I mean, the mere idea of us hearing that makes our mind become bewildered. We cannot understand that. And then I'll give the example of Devahuti. As you know, that Devahuti was the mother of Lord Kapila Dev. Her husband was Kardama Muni. And he also left household life and went into the forest. And he left Devahuti in charge with her only son, Kapila Dev. And Kapiladev preached to her Bhagavad Dharma. And then he left also. And so she also became old, and it was time for her to renounce. So it stated, let us look at how she renounced. Devahuti gave up all bodily comfort and worn only torn clothing. By following the instruction of Lord Kapila, she gave up all material attachments. While in meditation, she forgot about her material body. She went into the meditation, and gradually the elements of her body melted in the sacred river, and she went back to Godhead. But she was thoroughly Krishna conscious because of the preachings of Lord Kapila Dev. And so she was, it stated that as she meditated, her body melted into the river. Somewhere, I can't remember, some devotee was giving class and stated that her body turned into milk. I don't know I thought it was horrible. Anybody could recall that? Where her body actually turned into milk and disappeared.
His body turned into milk. Who's that?
Narottam Das
Thakur. Oh, okay.
I mean, maybe hers too,
but... Yeah. So this is interesting. And then I'll touch upon one other personality that attempted renunciation, but it's not that he failed, but he got distracted. Can anyone recall who is that personality? He renounced everything. He renounced his kingdom, his wife and everything. Who is it?
Maharaj
Bharat. That's right, Maharaj Bharat. Bharat Maharaj. So he gave up everything and went into the forest. And then, as you know the story, he was bathing in the river, and then he saw this deer was giving birth. I think a lion roared or something, and she got a miscarriage. And then Bharat tried to save that form. And in the midst of doing that, he became attached to it. So this is the warning also on the part of our process. One can become distracted. So as he became distracted, he became very attached to this deer, to the point that he could not sleep without it. And then one day the deer left also. And then what happened? He went to get her, and then he fell off a cliff. And as he was going to die, he was meditating and thinking about the deer. Or it's stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that he saw the deer. He saw the deer appeared in front of him. And as he left his body, he thought about the deer. And then what happens? Whatever one thinks at the time of death, then that being we will get in our next life. And so Bharat Maharaj became a deer. And then we know the details. He stayed near to an ashram and so forth. So this is the renunciation in Vedic times. But let us look at the renunciation in our time, like Rupa Goswami. What did he say? He said, anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjata nirbhanda krishna sambande yukta vairagyam uchyate. When one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts everything in relation to Krishna, one is rightly situated above possessiveness. And this is in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhi, 1.2.255. Rupa Goswami. See? So, when one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts everything in the relation to Krishna, one is rightly situated above possessiveness. And this is not easy to achieve, because to not attach to anything is not true. Even our body is not us. But we cannot say we are not attached to our body. Can anybody say here that he's not attached to his body? If you're hungry for a day, Mahananda says he. If you're hungry for a day or two, can you tolerate, say? Don't give the body food, can you do that? It's not possible, right? So these attachments are here, but through devotional service, it's possible. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha. By rendering devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So this is the art of becoming detached by serving the Lord. I can remember when I joined Krishna Consciousness, I was an accountant with the government. The government of Guyana. And but I had read Srila Prabhupada books when I was young, very young, maybe 13, 14. I had seen some devotees, or one devotee, I saw him in a saffron robe. But I had never seen that before. I had never seen anyone in a saffron robe. So I thought this guy was doing some miracle or something, practicing some yogic thing, what did I say? He was doing something, some mystical thing. And I just went in the house because I was kind of scared. That was 13. But my father stood there, and I think he purchased a book from that devotee. I don't recall who it was, if it was Bhutadi or whoever it was, really, you know, but I... So anyhow, I read that book, and I was attracted to Krishna consciousness. So anyhow, when I was working with the government, I met a devotee who was lecturing in that institute. And then I had already known about Krishna consciousness. And then I went into the ashram. It was a little cottage, nothing big. They had a little small house. And they had this little, what you could say like a shack. It was just, it had some branches on top and a little thing, and they were practicing them. And I was, but I was so attracted to the process that I eventually just gave up my job and went into the ashram. See, I gave up, I just went in there. And I did not feel like I lost anything. And I just started to go out and distribute books and like that. But like it's saying here, you know, that by rendering service to the Supreme Lord, causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. You know, and life was so happy then. You wouldn't believe, you know. I mean, we were living in this little hut. And it was mosquito infested. When I say mosquito infested, none of you have ever seen mosquito, well, except like Dhamraj and his wife. But you don't know what is mosquito. I mean, you could, when you pull your hand here, you could grab like a thousand, like when you make like this. I mean, there's so much, during the rainy season, so much mosquito. And we tolerated all of that. Like sometimes in the morning when you go into bed, there's a ditch, you know. It was pretty wide. So what we would do, we just run and just plunge into it. You know, there was so much mosquito behind us. We would plunge into it, come back and run back inside. You see? And that was how, and there were alligators in that pond also. But even all those austerities, you know, I mean, we were detached and happy. Life was so happy and so different, you see? And you know, we never regretted anything. We just went on serving. But I guess with time and getting into Grihastha life and everything, it's a different ball game. It's not the same, you know? But anyhow, So for the devotees, and then there's a higher understanding self, like Lord Chaitanya said. In fact, I think he was talking to, Sanatana Goswami. When Sanatana Goswami had wanted to kill himself because of the bodily infections he had, you know, he was so embarrassed and so forth. But Lord Chaitanya told him that body is not yours, you know, and you cannot take it like that. So the real understanding and the high understanding is that really we own nothing. You know, we own nothing whatsoever. And so what is there to detachment? But the higher understanding to that is that we can utilize everything that came into our, or that is in our position, within our position, to serve Krishna. I remember my father had a good bunch of cows, a good bit of cows. And I did not want him to sell any to the butcher or anything. So what I did, I got a truck and I go and got all these cows and bring it into the ashram. Utilize it in Krishna's service. You see? Some of them we could have milked, but not ting. The first week, Some of the poachers stole like three. Another week they stole like two. See, like that. But anyhow, I mean, when I was contemplating, we're trying to utilize these things in Krishna service, but then so much calamity is taking place. We eventually built a little camp on top the cow paddock. So the cows are here, like, and on top there we have a little shed there. And what we're doing, we're guarding the cow. Myself and another devotee called Pandava. And one night, when we were sleeping there, the guys came and took one of the cow from under the, from whilst we were up there watching the cows, they took one and escaped with it. So we went through a lot of difficulties in when we were thinking of utilizing everything for Krishna. I mean, it was, we couldn't believe it. So, but still, I mean, despite disappointments and whatever we have, like I had read in this passage, Bhakti Vinod had stated, wife, children, family, everything should be utilized in the service of the Lord. And by doing so, then everything is directed towards its proper its real owner, so to speak, because the Lord owns everything. So the other part of this verse is stating that Lord Krishna, he is the supreme being, and he is the Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta philosophy because the subject matter is the absolute truth, which is none different from the spirit soul. It's the ultimate reality, one without a second. The goal of this literature is the exclusive devotional service unto that supreme truth. Exclusive devotional service. Now in this Kali Yuga has just started. But you would not believe the amount of atheists that are within this world today. It's stated like at least 60% of Europe are atheists. Can you imagine that? Then the Russian country, or the communist country, so to speak, like Russia, China, Korea, and so forth. The atheists there is over 80%. So Kali Yuga has just started. And look, these people don't have any clue about God, do not believe in God, do not care about God. Can you imagine this? At this time of Kali Yuga? So by the end of Kali Yuga, can we imagine what would actually happen? See? So it's important for us to preach. I mean, Krishna is the absolute truth. It's stated here it's none different from the spirit, the jiva. None different in the sense, it's like a drop of water. A drop of water from the ocean is none different from the ocean. Really. It has all the qualities of the ocean in minute quantity. See? So that's the idea here. Really. So even though the jivas, all of us have like all the qualities of the supreme in minute quantity. So that's the point. But so the Lord, he is the supreme being. He is the creator of this universe. He is the maintainer of it also. Imagine what is really what is surprising is that some people would blatantly say that this world can survive without a supreme. In fact, most of the scientists, they say that this world operates on the laws of science, the laws of physics, and there is no need for a supreme being, and there is no need to mention a supreme being. I mean, can you imagine this kind of rationality? So it is important for us to promote the glories of the Supreme Lord, his pastimes, his activities and so forth. Tomorrow is Radhashtami, and I would like to I would like to relate a pastime of the Lord, because this is important for us. But it is a pastime that I doubt whether most of you have heard of, and it would be a little bit, maybe a little surprising, so to speak. That, but it's in relation with what's happening in the world and what's been predicted in the scriptures in the early times. So it's stated that once Lord Krishna was having a conjugal relationship with Srimati Radharani, and in the midst of that, Radha fainted. Srimati Radha fainted. And Lord Krishna left, and he went with another gopi called Viraja. And so he was with this gopi, Viraja. Radha came back into consciousness, and her associates, I mean, somehow they got to know about this, and they related it to Radha, and she went there. But as she went there, Lord Krishna disappeared. Lord Krishna disappeared, and Viraja turned into a river. She turned into a river in Goloka. So Radha did not find anyone, but she was still upset. You know, Krishna had disappeared and Viraja had turned into a river. So she went back to her place. So when she went back, Lord Krishna, he reappeared, and he accosted Viraja, the river, to come back into her human-like form. So she eventually came back. And they had pastimes. It stated, in the course of time, 7 sons were born to her. And one day was, Lord Krishna was with Viraja. The youngest boy was being harassed by the other brothers. And so he ran to his mother. And as she disturbed the relationship with Krishna and Viraja, Lord Krishna disappeared. And so Viraja became very upset. And she cursed her sons. Well, she first cursed the little boy, and then she cursed all of them. She said that because of your misbehavior like this, then you will become the salt ocean on earth. And the other boys, they became the other 6 oceans. So when the Srimad Bhagavatam spoke about the ocean of salt water, the ocean of butter, the ocean of ghee, of sugarcane juice, the ocean of liquor, all these boys became the 7 oceans. And so it made sense, because when this description was given, that you know, sometimes people would be critical and say that this is impossible, to have an ocean of liquor, or an ocean of sweet water, or an ocean of ghee. See? But we can see how this story is related to what's been explained within Srimad Bhagavatam. And so I guess they were coarse for a certain time, and with time they disappeared. But so when the Bhagavatam explains that Priyavrata, with his chariot, had created the seven islands on earth. I mean, it's literal. Some devotees are saying, oh, no, it's not that and this. But Bharatvarsha is on the southern point of Jambudvip. Bharatvarsha is said to be India. I mean, all the description within the Bhagavatam explains that it is India. There's no doubt about that. So if we know India is on the southern part of Asia, so definitely Asia has to be Jambudvip. And the other continents have to be the other islands that's being described in some scholars said that part Africa or part of Africa is Salmali Dvipa, surrounded by the Lika Ocean. That stated that North America is Karnsha Dvip, it's shaped like a Karnsha, like a crane. South America is Sakadu, Pushkardu. See, like that. Anyhow, but I mean, it's difficult to depict the seven islands being described within the Bhagavatam and now. But those islands have to be what the Bhagavatam was talking about. It's just that we cannot pinpoint them directly. But anyhow, so coming back to this story. So these boys were coarse, and because Viraja was very upset of her unfulfilled desires with the Supreme Lord. And instead of the Lord Krishna went back to Srimati Radharani. And as he was there, she was abusing him. And Lord Krishna had a friend called Sridhama. And Sridhama was very taken back by what was happening, because he said that this being who has been worshipped by all the demigods and everyone in the Supreme Lord, in this universe, and he can create billions of gopis in a twinkle of an eye. How are you embarrassing him like this? See? And so she cursed him. She said, he was saying that, but she's saying, but you don't know me and you don't know my powers. And so since you're like the demons who are blaming the demigods, and since you are behaving like this, I would course you to become a demon for 500 yugas. And so Sridhama became Sankachuda. But before he actually came on earth, he also decided to course Srimati Radharani. He said, well, you would have to come on earth also. You'll have to come on earth. And you would have to face the embarrassment of marrying Abhimanyu while relating with Krishna. And also, you would have to face separation for 100 years with him. See? So all this was already predicted. But of course, none of this could have taken place if the Lord did not desire it. The Lord comes once in the day of Brahma, so he desired these things to happen so that he could have his pastimes carried out or not. I think he was also asked to come. Well, of course, he knew his time was to come on earth, so he wanted Radha to come also, so he arranged all of this to happen. So tomorrow is Radha Ashtami, and so at least we have some clue of how she would come to earth. She would appear as the daughter of Rishabhanu and Kirtida. See, but I guess I would leave that for tomorrow. The speaker would explain all of that. But so this is how the story goes. And I would end the Bhagavatam if anybody would like to ask a question or make a comment or a correction. Yes, Prabhuji? Mahananda Prabhu, welcome back. I haven't seen you for quite a while.
Your class has mostly been about renunciation. And of course, that's confusing because before you're a devotee, in the lower processes of yoga, renunciation is important, and cultivating knowledge is important. And sometimes, you know, when you speak of unalloyed devotional service, that term means it's not alloyed with dhyana or with renunciation and cultivation. It's just the ninefold process. And I'd like to just bring up a point that Rupa Goswami, that he brought up in the Nectar Devotion that Prabhupada translated. It's the first couple of paragraphs in chapter 14. And he says that some scholars, they do recommend that renunciation and cultivation of knowledge are important factors of devotional service. But then he says, actually, that's not a fact. Although these two things may help to gain a foothold in Krishna consciousness, they may ultimately come to be rejected. And he explains that because Krishna consciousness relies on nothing more than the sentiment or the desire for such service. Okay?
Yeah, so, very good point, yeah.
So, yeah, that's chapter 14, if anybody wants to read it.
Yeah, yeah, of course. But knowledge, but definitely your point is well taken. Of course, ultimately it's our bhakti that goes. But jnana and vairagya comes hand in hand. Knowledge is essential in the sense that it, without knowledge, then it's difficult to actually surrender to Krishna. You see?
Well,
without knowledge,
doesn't it explain that Krishna, he gives us that renunciation and that knowledge?
Of course, yeah, true devotion,
of course. Well, in the next paragraph, Rupa Goswami explains, he says, because too much knowledge and too much renunciation makes one's heart harder, you know.
That's and, good, yes.
And if I have a moment, could I ask a question?
Okay.
You talked about conjugal love of Krishna. And I'm a little confused sometimes because, and many non-devotees, they think that, you know, Prabhupada criticizes this artwork they do in India where they have lecherous pictures of Krishna with the gopis, you know. What I mean, like in the material sense. And also the gopis, when they were doing the rasa dance, the fact is they were 8 years old, so they were just little girls. And also the fact that Lord Krishna, all of his senses are interchangeable. So Krishna can have a complete union with one of the gopis just by, say, Brubhanga. You know, doing this with his eyes. And so my question is, and I guess I don't really want to go into detail, is because Lord Krishna, when he was born, he wasn't born, he was born out of the mind, you know, from the mind.
He appeared.
So I wonder how children are born in the spiritual world.
Oh.
You know.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting question. It's not been explained within the scriptures, but at least we can say that they are also human-like beings. You know, I mean, yeah, but you know, so they have sentiments, activities, everything. But in terms of the details, you know, Viraj could just think about, you know, I mean, about a child and the child would appear or whatever. I mean, it's never been described in the scripture in terms of how a child is born in the spiritual world, you know. But anyhow, at least we will, for now, we will just take that it happened, it's born.
Plays with his friends, his young friends, that's eternal. So they don't get older, right? I mean, they don't grow up into adults. They
yeah.
You know, they, for eternity, they're small, they're little boys playing with Krishna. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm getting into areas that are...
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, these are, you know, higher areas. But I guess as we become purified, so to speak, yeah. As we become purified, we'll have to understand. Yeah. And actually, when you reach there, you know more too. Is it? Any other points? Dhammaraj Prabhu.
No, you were talking about the austerities in Guyana, and I guess you were talking about Nupanihati, so I remember two stories. The situation is such that one morning, a Granny Swami was coming down from Mangalarti, coming down the stairs, and this alligator was up from the bottom, two stairs up, blocking his path. And I had to go to stick to scare it away to come down. And one Satrup Maharaj was flying from Trinidad with his two of his disciples. So who never went to Guyana before? So on the flight from Trinidad to Guyana, he was giving them an idea as to what Panihati is like, where they were going. So he told them the story that once the temple president's wife was in the yard, that's Paramahansa Prabhu's wife, and this cougar jumped, you know, pounced on her, but it got caught in the barbed wire fencing, and that's what saved her. Yeah. And these two disciples, they were starting to panic, and they wanted to turn back.
Yeah.
Because they're so scared.
Yeah,
so.
It was a jaguar. They thought it was a jaguar because South America is full of jaguars, and because Guyana is next to Brazil, they would come over, and there's lots of cows there. Where we were staying, really, behind us, there were thousands of cows. So jaguar would actually come to attack them, and I guess Paramatma's wife was a little lucky that she didn't.
Yeah, because of the fencing.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned earlier about Maharaj Bharat, and you talked about, you know, the verse from Bhagavad Gita that whatever one remembers at the state at the time of leaving his body, that's, you know, yeah, except that body. But on the flip side, if you looked at Maharaj Bharat's case, that even though he thought of the body or thought of this deer, that Krishna gave him such a wonderful opportunity that even in that form, he was fully Krishna conscious. So, was he Krishna conscious at the time when he was passing and he was absorbing the thoughts of the deer? As we know, he was always a full-fledged devotee, and he fell into that catastrophe per se. So on one hand, we can see how it applies. On the other hand, we can see how Krishna directly got involved, that even though at the time he was thinking of something else, but Krishna's mercy goes way beyond the norms of regular practice. I remember once, I think it was 1972, on a morning walk in Mayapur, Srila Prabhupada was discussing this point. And he's saying that at the time of fasting, even if a devotee does not remember Krishna, Krishna is not ungrateful. Krishna remembers them. He remembers all the services that devotee has done. So that coincides with what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj says, that don't act in such a way to try to see the Lord, but act in such a way so that the Lord sees you. So we can see the different levels of your understanding of our scriptural injunctions from different angles, how the basics are there, but beyond is the transcendental level, as what you describe with Jad Bharat, you know, Maharaj Bharat and Jad Bharat.
Yeah, definitely, so, definitely. And if we come short in some way, the Lord make up for it, you know. He helps us. I mean, if we fall short, if somehow at the time of death we're struggling with serious ailment, we cannot think of him really. All that is made up for by the Lord, because we're his devotees, you know. Yeah, what he says, declared boldly, my devotee never perishes. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.